on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and it is Friday, March 21st, 2025. Now, it's been a while since I've been here with you. I got back from some time off, and certainly the past couple weeks have been, well, different. Different in the markets, different in terms of news. Today might be a different show because you can hear this band outside of my apartment incessantly playing at 4 p.m. on a Friday. But nonetheless, through these changes, through these differences, we persevere. Because it's important to never lose focus on why we come to Invest Talk and why we care about becoming better, more informed investors. And the reason why we care is because through those things that we hope we are a small part of, we hope that we can help you achieve your financial freedom. And so as the year continues to bring fresh challenges, as the market continues to be very different from the market of the past 2 years, you must remain focused. And so for our small part, we do bring educational items to the table. We bring action items to the table as well. But most importantly, you steer the conversation through your finance and investment questions. And so with that in mind, before we run down those show topics that we brought to the table today, before we talk about the market performance today and this week, let's tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, my name is Adam. I'm calling from El Dorado Hills, California. I had a question regarding Mosaic, ticker MOS. Seems like it's setting for a nice big run. It's been consolidating for a few years after about 1,000% gain from the lows of 2020 to, I think, the high of 2022. Just want to know what you thought of the chart. Thank you.
So ticker MOS is Mosaic Company. It is the leading producer and marketer of concentrated phosphate and crop nutrients. It's an ag chemical company. Now, it's down about 1.96% today. And from a financial perspective, its performance has been okay, though most recent quarterly performance has fallen short of investor, or rather analyst, estimates. It also had some operational challenges, right? They had a decrease in their potash production coming into September into November. And the reason why is, well, they had a huge disruption in November as well from hurricanes, which did hurt their bottom line profits. It also operates in a global marketplace, meaning that other ag chemical producers in other countries, think Russia, think Belarus, can have adverse effects on overall profits by how they attack supply in the market. Now, year to date, this company is up 13.22%, up 15.62% over the 3 months. But over the past year, it's down still 13.14%. It had a pretty rough 2024, down 31%, underperforming the S&P 500 by 54. It was down 18.6% in 2023, underperforming the S&P 500 by 42. And so with that all in mind, what does it look like from a relative valuation perspective? Well, from a relative valuation perspective, it's trading still above its five-year average, about 12 times forward-looking earnings, 0.8 times its book value, so still below the book value of its assets. But when I pull back a little bit and I take a look at the trends of this company, cash flow is falling pretty quickly from its high in 2022, at the end of 2022. Profitability is falling as well. Look at their net margin. They had a high of about 18.7% in 2022, down to about 1.6% this year. Projected to rebound heading into the end of 2025. But still, as with any company that is predicated upon the pricing of a commodity, it's going to be incredibly volatile. And so I haven't seen anything from a macro perspective that leads me to believe that over the next 3-6 months, demand is going to pick up that much more than it has now. Certainly, there can also be some supply issues that are pushing profits down. And so until I see that, I think there are better opportunities out there. It is inherently a volatile name because it's an inherently a volatile space. That is Mosaic Company, ticker MOS. And we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you, time permitting. My main focus point concerns this topic: recency bias, how recent events skew investment decisions. Recency bias is a cognitive error that occurs when investors overemphasize recent information, recent events, and it can lead you to irrational decisions. It can lead you to ignore what is in front of you. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll also touch on something that Justin and I talk about pretty frequently, and that is it is very, very, very difficult to run a car business. We're not just talking Tesla here. We're talking about the big auto manufacturers as well. And so why is it more challenging now than it has been in some time to really build a global car company? We'll also touch on the latest in meme stocks, retail investors taking on hedge funds in Europe. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on the SEC, who is holding a roundtable on a crypto task force as the Trump administration plans regulatory revamps. Also, as you may have heard, our second annual InvestTalk Market Madness competition is going on now. Someone is going to win $1,000 by showcasing their investment skills. So a little bit later in the podcast, we will touch on today's results. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on MOS, which we already played, and one on investing strategies. Also, some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Let me touch on a topic that most listeners need to understand. I want to talk about creating a trust and a will. Until recently, this has been a very slow and time-consuming process. Things have changed now, because trust and will makes creating your will easy. And before I go further, let me pass along the news that you can get 10% off at trustandwill.com/invest. Listen, I know from personal experience that the peace of mind that comes from having one's wishes and assets secure is a good feeling. And once you get your trust and will squared away, you can focus on the other important tasks in your life, whether they are for business or fun. When you work with Trust and Will, each will or trust is state-specific, legally valid, and customized to your needs. Their simple step-by-step process guides you from start to finish, one question at a time. You'll be able to keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. Uncomplicate the process with Trust and Will. Protect what matters most in minutes at trustandwill.com/invest and get 10% off plus free shipping. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/invest.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers,
if you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein,
and that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Well, you've had Justin Klein for just about 2 weeks now. Today you have Luke Guerrero. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks ended mostly higher in trading on Friday, a little bit near their session highs. For most of the day, they were trading lower, down as much as 40 basis points. The S&P 500 was About 30 minutes before the close, though, rallied into the close. The Dow up 8 basis points, S&P up 8 basis points today, the NASDAQ up 52 basis points. Small caps, though, other direction, down 56 basis points on the day. And so because of this rally into the close, the NASDAQ, the S&P, the Russell 2000 actually all logged weekly gains after 4 straight weeks of declines. Outperformers included food, media, apparel, manufacturing, money center names. Big tech was mostly higher, though NVIDIA was a little bit of a drag on the day, lagging the rest of the pack. Underperformers included parcels, home builders, industrial metals, chemicals, and machinery. Dollar index was up 20 basis points. Gold finished down about 70 basis points on the day, and crude oil ended up 30 basis points. As I mentioned, a little bit of a rally. And overall, though, from a volume perspective, it was a pretty subdued trading day. And the reason why? There were very few headlines, not just headlines from a policy perspective. There were some headlines from an earnings perspective. But, you know, from a macro perspective, not much going on. A little bit of a focus on the largely underwhelming batch of high-profile earnings that were after the close on Thursday. A little bit of an emphasis on the upcoming April 2nd deadline for the reciprocal tariffs. There is still a big overhang on sentiment, though it is important to note that Trump did say today that there will be some flexibility. How that manifests itself, how the market digests the manifestation of that, still to be seen. Also, recent ramp-up in growth concerns also dampened to an extent. Why? Well, some resilience in hard economic data. Overall, nothing on the U.S. economic calendar today, though next week brings, what does next week bring? Flash PMIs on Monday, consumer confidence, Fed manufacturing and new home sales on Tuesday, durable good orders on Wednesday, the final GDP and pending home sales on Thursday, and the PCE personal consumption expenditures index, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, hits next week as well, along with the final University of Michigan consumer sentiment on Friday. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends and family members about our audio podcast, our radio show, now being available in video form over there on YouTube. And you know, the way we slice it and dice it is a little bit different because some people want some different things. So while we offer you our full podcast here from start to finish, we kind of break it up a little bit. And so maybe you wake up in the morning, you just want to review those caller questions, head over there, check it out. We break everything apart. Sometimes it's good to get a little bit of change. Now, while you're over there, should you have a question that you need answered that is burning in your mind, you can just leave it in the comment section of any of our Invest Talk YouTube videos, and we like to get to those as soon as we can. This one from our friend Selena Marie, 6220, and it is about Nike. The question is Nike a buy right now? I have very little consumer discretionary in my portfolio at this time. I believe the brand has a wide moat, and the CEO's focus on product innovation is promising. Well, certainly wouldn't have been a good buy when you posted this question yesterday. Unless you posted it today, you might have posted it today. But still, Nike is down 5.46% on the back of some pretty poor earnings. And that's because they've had a decline in revenue for 2 consecutive quarters, not just missing analyst estimates, but an actual decline in revenue. Look at the sales right here, right? They reached a peak in May of 2023, about $51 billion in revenue, and then it was down to 51.386 as of May of 24, which is their fiscal year end. Headed into May of this year, projected to fall by $6 billion from last year. And in that time, their margins are compressing as well, from a high of almost 13% in 2022, projected to be 6.9% this year. And so what is driving this price downward? Well, one thing is tariffs. Potential for new tariffs that could really hurt the costs of their supply chain. And so that is going to weigh even more heavily on a consumer whose savings are a little bit depleted. If things become more expensive, one of the things they're probably not going to buy as much of, clothes. And so that could weigh down on not just revenue, but bottom line profits for Nike as well. Now, from a relative valuation perspective, Nike's still trading pretty high, 31 times forward-looking earnings, 7.6 times its book value, 17.5 times its cash flow. There are positives, right? They do buy back shares. They buy back a lot of shares. They've been buying back shares since 2021. They do pay a pretty solid dividend. It's in about 2.23%, though. Of note, double where it's been over the past 5 years, meaning Well, the price has fallen pretty precipitously, down 32% over the past 52 weeks. I believe they are now at a five-year low. And so, is now the time to buy Nike? Well, they're breaking down from a technical perspective. There's not much positivity there in terms of the next 3 to 6 months. It could be close to a time in which you would want to buy Nike, but this also could be a situation where you're catching a falling knife into a deteriorating consumer ability to spend on names like these discretionary names. And so for Nike, ticker NKE, I think you should wait on it. I think it may continue to head lower. Some of the macro trends are not favorable for companies such as this. Now, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow and this week in the KPP Insight section. We're talking about options, all you need to know about options, strategies with options, when they can be helpful, when they can be a little risky. The stock ideas section, we mentioned a medical devices company, as well as a holding manufacturing. Oh, I'm sorry. We mentioned a medical devices manufacturer and holding company. That's a mouthful sometimes. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on active investing versus passive investing. I feel as though today, those lines tend to blur a little bit. Back in the day, you know, you had index funds, mutual funds, which were very passive. They just tracked an index. Now you have more active mutual funds, active ETFs, giving investors a whole bunch of options. And certainly in different environments, passive investing can be beneficial, active investing can be beneficial. But it's important to be able to draw that distinction. So we talk about that in our portfolio management section. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox Saturday afternoon. Now we're headed into a break. And on the other side, we will dig into the main focus point as well as more questions. Stay with me. In fact, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's dig right into my main focus point today, which concerns an important topic because it can affect investors in a lot of ways. More specifically, we're going to talk about a bias that a lot of people have called recency bias. And because of this, recent events, recent experiences, rather than what the future is telling you, can skew your life decisions, your personal decisions, your investment decisions. Now, recency bias, which is also called availability bias, is when people give far too much weight to recent events, recent experiences, and it helps to distort their understanding and change how they're interpreting information that they're getting now. And this is bad because it can cause pretty irrational behavior, like fearing very rare events. From a personal standpoint, maybe hearing that someone was attacked by a shark last week in New Jersey means that you don't want to go to the beach today. A good example of this, right, is when the movie Jaws came out, when it hit theaters, and beachgoers dropped off dramatically, even though in reality, shark attacks are incredibly rare. Very rare. From an investing perspective, this can lead to two things. It can lead to over-anticipating, over-anticipating how bad things can be, or maybe thinking that things can be good forever, right? We had some pretty strong rallies in 2023 and in 2024. So recency bias would tell an investor, well, bull markets last forever. But we know that's not the case, and so we can cause irrational behavior there. The example that I always point to, because I think this affects people psychologically a lot, is when you hear the word recession, most people think about 2008, a global credit crisis, a global financial crisis, the likes of which we hadn't really seen maybe since the Great Depression. And so when you think about recessions, you think it's always going to be like that when it rarely is. And so that may cause you to act in a way that is irrational, that could hurt your long-term investing prospects and the prospect of you achieving your long-term investing goals. Now, this can also lead to other things, right? It can lead to not just your views of where the world is going, but your views of your own abilities. Maybe you picked a pie-in-the-sky biotech stock that makes absolutely no money, that has a wonder drug that it says it's going to make 10 years from now, and you're up 1,000%. Well, recency bias may lead you to believe that you are the best stock picker of all time. And it may lead you to take on more and more outsized risk, which could really harm you in the long run. And so what's the best defense here? You know, people talk about all the time when the market's going down to zoom out. To zoom out and see the long-term trends. It's the same thing here. Think about a long-term strategy. I say this all the time. Investing is not just about returns, it's about risk mitigation as well. It's about understanding that the purpose of investing is trying to be able to consume what you have earned at a certain period of time. And so because of that, you have to mitigate those risks. Because you don't know what the market's going to be like when you need to draw down on that money. And so that's why one of the best defenses is rebalancing regularly, diversifying. But more than anything, tuning out the short-term noise, which can lead you to less advantageous actions. This, I think, is a really good place where financial advisors can be helpful. I think financial advisors can be incredibly helpful because they can take a less emotional approach and help you understand what your goals are and keep you focused towards the long term while removing that short-term noise. But either way, understanding the cognitive biases that we have can help us to overcome them and become better investors. Now it is Friday, and on Fridays we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers, so let me hit you with that list right now. Two-year treasury yield was at 3.954% today. For perspective, 2 weeks back it was at 3.964. 34 weeks ago it was 3.882, and 72 weeks ago it was at 5.05. The 10-year yield was at 4.25 today. 2 weeks back, that number was 4.282. 30 weeks ago, it was 3.921. And 72 weeks back, it was 4.63. Gold was priced at $3,022 per ounce today. That is a $115 increase over the price 2 weeks ago. 71 weeks back, it was $1,935 when we wish we had all bought a lot of gold. And 160 weeks ago, it was $1,806. Silver, the other precious metal, was at $33.03 per ounce today. That's an increase of 83 cents over the price 2 weeks ago. 58 weeks back, that number was $22.80. And 152 weeks back, that number was $23.94. Oil was selling at $68.28 per barrel today. That is an increase of $1.31 compared to 2 weeks ago. 26 weeks back, that number was $67.79. And 68 weeks ago, that number was $74.30. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.12 per gallon, a 2 cent increase over 2 weeks ago. 94 weeks ago it was $3.56, and 142 weeks ago it was $4.25. California, $4.64 per gallon, a 9 cent decrease, heading in the right direction. For comparison, in North Carolina, gas is averaging $2.81 per gallon today. That is $1.83 less than gas in California. Moving into a break, give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk, I have a question for you. I am 29 years old and I have a brokerage account that's accumulated about $30,000 in total. I am debating on whether to throw money into a SPLG index fund or just go into SPY in general. I'm also thinking about the triple Q or maybe another alternative, so that way I get more exposure to tech. My goal is to increase wealth throughout my career and keep adding, I guess, monthly, maybe $200 to $400 for my paycheck, give or take. Looking forward to hearing the answer on the show. Thank you.
So let's take a look at this SPLG First, which is the Spider Portfolio S&P 500 ETF. Tracks the total return of the S&P 500. And so that's going to be very similar to a SPY fund, right? Because you're doing the exact same thing there. And so the difference then should really be expense ratio when you're looking at these two. SPY, about 9 basis points, that is 0.09 basis points, versus SPLG, sitting at about 2 basis points. And so for that reason alone, so long as the return has been the same over the past 5 years, 21.6 versus, bear with me, 21.52. Okay, very similar investment experience. I would want to go for the cheaper one. And the reason why is because the fees that you're paying are going to erode your returns over time. Now, you mentioned also thinking about going into the Qs, which is going to be more highly concentrated in the tech space because the Qs is tracking the NASDAQ. But, you know, I think that overall, you're probably going to get a similar investment experience by allocating towards these names. Why? Because the S&P is heavily focused on tech. Again, the Qs is a lot more heavily focused on tech, about 62%. Over the past 5 years, the return has been very similar amongst these two. And so over time, as you have more capital in your account, this is why it makes sense to diversify more. Now, for now, I think it's perfectly fine to put your $30,000 in an S&P 500 fund that is low fee. But what we know over long periods of time is that value names tend to outperform, that small cap names tend to outperform. And so for somebody who is as young as you are, who has the ability to take on risk, I would think of going outside of the US large cap space and into those names that, yes, carry more risk, but over longer periods of time have had higher returns. Not necessarily over the past decade, but I'm talking about the entire time sample of data. Diversification is your friend here. You shouldn't just put it in one fund. You can put it in many funds. Thanks for the call. Now, I want to talk a little bit about our updates to our Market Madness competition here. And so over the past couple days, we have given you winners of the day. And so let me pull up our bracket here on my screen for those of you who are watching at home, and we can go over the winners today. Maybe talk a little bit about why they were who they were. So let's start from the bottom up. One of the competitions today, Nike, NKE versus Yeti, YETI. The winner on the day is Yeti. We already talked about Nike today. They announced earnings, poor earnings, and because of that, they were the loser. Dollar General versus Bath & Body Works. Dollar General was the winner today. Vital Farms versus McDonald's. Vital Farms, the big winner on the day. We had Revolve Group as well versus Vail Resorts. Vail been in the hot seat recently for some, see, less than positive interactions with their ski unions, with their ski patrol unions, but it's really hurt their holiday season. And, well, Revolve was the winner between that matchup. Celsius Holdings, a hot name, versus Home Depot, an established name. Celsius Holdings was the winner on the day. Arhaus Inc. versus Hilton Worldwide. Arhaus, the big winner there. Estee Lauder versus Five Below. Five Below took the belt there. And the behemoth, Amazon versus Planet Fitness, that gym where everything seems to be purple. Amazon, the big winner on the day. Not really a lot of rhyme or reason between who won each individual matchups. You had some on the more established name side losing. You had some on the less established names winning, right? Big driver, earnings, has as it tends to be on under or over performance, but overall really just a mix of winners and losers on the day, to be expected in what was a overall low volume trading day. Looking forward to next week where we start to have the matchup in the round of 32 in this region up here. Twilio and CrowdStrike going together, Privia Health and Axiom Therapeutics against each other, ON Semiconductor and Lovelands Biotherapeutics against each other, and a little-known company called NVIDIA versus a tiny company named Palo Alto Networks. That is next week. We will have the wrap-up for you on Monday. Best of luck to everybody who's competing. Now, I know you've heard this from both myself and Justin over time. And it's because investors call and they say, well, I really want to get into Ford. I really want to get into General Motors. I really want to get into XYZ car company, Rivian, Tesla. And the answer tends to be the same. And that is the car business is a horrendous business to get into, probably only just slightly better than airlines. And so you've seen this attempt by Tesla, which has been very successful over the past decade in creating an EV market where one did not exist, where it tried to have its global ambitions, right? Be a disruptive tech strong brand with international plans, but that hasn't really worked out as well. Now, their revenue is, or has historically been, pretty evenly split, right? 50% in North America, 30% in Asia, about 13% in Europe. And that's very impressive for a company that isn't as old as some of those behemoths, their BMWs, your Toyotas, your General Motors. But for EV companies, for Tesla, there's some challenges in the global marketplace. One is protectionism, right? China is favoring domestic brands. China is a massive, massive market. Another is tariffs, right? Cars aren't just built in one location. When U.S. auto manufacturers, I'm talking about the classics, when Ford is building a car, that thing can hop between the U.S. and Canadian border as much as 10 times before it's done. And each time, we require paying importation duties. But for EV companies, there's also another issue, right? You have the fragmented EV adoption amongst countries. And so because of this, what you're seeing is not necessarily the consolidation that these big companies would want to see, but more focus on regional names. Chinese are buying Chinese EV manufacturers. Europeans are trying to buy European EV manufacturers. And it's not just because there are differences in tastes and preferences across markets, but it's just because it tends to also be cheaper, right? Stellantis, a global mega merger, is kind of faltering. The stock's down 16% because of production delays and also a bloated brand portfolio. Historically, attempts by General Motors and by Ford to really expand have also failed due to inefficiencies, due to inconsistent products, due to protectionist backlash within manufacturing, due to costs. Even when you have global successes like Toyota, I was just in Japan recently. Toyota's everywhere, obviously. It's everywhere in the US. It's everywhere in Europe. They have different product lines for different countries, but that can be an issue, right? The US tends to prefer larger vehicles. In Europe, in Asia, they tend to prefer smaller, more efficient vehicles. And so anytime you're trying to create two distinct product lines, that becomes inherently more expensive. And so with this lies the issue. Manufacturing has always been, and probably now more than any time in the recent past, a hot button protectionist issue in many countries. And so over the past couple years, as we've gotten calls about, you know, should I invest in this car company here? This car company has global ambitions here. The growth here is fantastic. Well, now more than ever, I'm going to push back on that because the trends are not favoring consolidation and an overall grabbing of market share by global players. No, as has manufacturing been moving over the past year, as sentiment has been moving, so too should, or rather will likely move the car space more to regional champions over global giants. Let's pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank. This one came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
This is Craig calling from the mountains outside Seattle. Looking at the energy sector, and I'm curious your take on ticker symbol SM. I would like to understand how it's evaluated and why. You know, I have a very small position, about 100 shares, but I want to know whether or not it's worth buying more. So look forward to your feedback. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. Let's pull up ticker symbol SM on all of the screens I have really quickly. I hope you're enjoying your time outside the mountains of Seattle. It's really a beautiful, beautiful place up there, especially this time of year. I might be the only native Californian that really loves the snow, so I have a little bit of jealousy there. But either way, let's take a look at SM. It is an energy name. It is SM Energy Company. It is an independent energy company, engages in the provision of an exploration of oil, gas, and natural gas liquids. Now, in terms of its breakdown of revenue, it looks like about 82% of it comes from oil, about 9% of it comes from gas, and about another 9% of it comes from those NGLs. Now, year to date, it's down 20.87%, probably because oil is doing poorly. For the past 52 weeks, it's down 37%, which is certainly not good. And over the past 3 months, it's down 16.18%. Even year to date, it's underperforming its industry by about 22%. And so, as with any company, just like that agricultural chemicals company we saw earlier, the revenue is going to be predicated upon really the price of the commodity that they're selling. In this case, mostly oil. 82% of it oil. And so you see the revenue fluctuates pretty heavily. They had a high in 2022, about $3.3 billion, falling to $2.3 billion the next year, up again to $2.6 billion the next year, projected to be $3.4 billion this year. Now, their cash flow has been relatively steady, but their profitability has been falling. Their net margin was 34% in 2023, down to 28% this year, projected to be about 22.4% this upcoming year. Now, today they're down about 1%, even with oil gaining on the day. One of the reasons that their stock has been flat for some time could be because they have upper-level leadership changes. Now, it is flat from a relative valuation perspective, but from a pure price action perspective, it's been on a downward trend for about a year now. Now, they have had some operational successes in the Midland Basin, and they have been able to explore more within the Klondike area. But I think one of the bigger issues is prevailing trends here. From a relative valuation perspective, it is cheap as cheap can be. 4.7 times forward-looking earnings, 0.8 times price to book value, about 2 times cash flow. The margins are headed in the wrong direction. Growth is slowing down even more than some of its competitors have. And really, I'm not seeing any positive trends in cash flow that lead me to believe that this name is going to outperform its peers. In fact, it has a lot of short interest out there, about 9% short interest. So for now, I would stay away from SM Energy Company. I think there are better areas for you to get energy exposure, certainly ones that are more diversified and not 82% in oil. That is SM Energy. Gonna have to pass. It's like we got plenty of time here. What do we want to go to? Maybe a YouTube question. Yeah, let's go to a YouTube question. So as I mentioned, we are available on YouTube now. I hope you check it out. This one came in earlier from our friend Jim Leahy. He leaves a lot of questions over there, and we like to get to his as soon as we possibly can. It's on ticker KSPI. It says, would love your thoughts on KSPI. Looking to get more international exposure, and this name looks promising. So let's pull it up. So KSPI is Kaspi Joint Stock Company. It's a leading Kazakhstani fintech company offering a range of services, including payments, marketplace, and financial technology solutions. So it is available through KSPI, which is its ADR. Now, over the past 52 weeks, it's down about 20%. Year to date, it's up 0.29%. It is a $3 billion. No, let me pull this up here because this is on the local currency. Give me one moment, please. Looks like it's an $18 billion market cap company. And so let's take a look at its growth. Well, it's grown pretty well from 2019, from $685 million in revenue to about $2.3 billion by 2024. That's its interest income. Its net interest income has grown at a clip of 21.5% over the past 5 years. Now, from a debt perspective, they do have a little bit of debt, only about $252 million, though that is not much compared to its company size. They pay a really high dividend. About 5.6%. That sounds like it may be too high, but it was 7.8% in 2024. From a valuation perspective, looks like its forward-looking price to earnings is 7.1%, pretty cheap. Price to book at about 6.3%. You know, here's my thing. I think that over the past decade, right, the American exceptionalism trade has really benefited U.S. markets. And you've kind of started to see that deteriorate in the short term. That's something that we actually talked about today. Justin and I and the team were talking about today in the office. And so I think that the inclination to reach into international markets is a good one. It's a good one. But you have to understand that certain markets carry outsized risks relative to other markets. Kazakhstan is a less developed market than areas where I would want to reach to, especially within the fintech space, which tends to be incredibly volatile. Not just because financing is volatile in that country, but because a lot of it is going to be predicated upon currency volatility relative to the US dollar, and a less established country is going to have higher volatility. And so if you want to reach into international markets, absolutely go for it. I personally think more established countries in Europe will likely do better on a relative basis than they have over the past 10 years, over the next three. Thanks for watching. I'm Luke Guerrero. We're headed into our final break, so get your live questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Let's get to our final YouTube question of the day with this one on Ralph Loren. It says, love your show. Subscribe right away. If you get a chance, could you evaluate Ralph Loren? That is ticker LR. For those of you who don't know, Ralph Lauren is a global leader in design, marketing, and distribution of American luxury lifestyle products. They've been around for quite some time at this point. They actually started publicly trading in 1997. And since then, well, they've done pretty well. Past 52 weeks. Sorry? Oh. Apologies. I'm being told I said LR. It is RL is the ticker. And so... over the past 52 weeks, it's up 17.65%, outperforming its industry every year since 2021. In 2024, it was up 60%. 2023 was up 36.5%. It outperformed its industry by 99% in 2024. And so why has it had such benefits? Well, if you've been listening to me talk about artificial intelligence, you'd know that one of the things I said early on when this whole craze started is if you wanted to benefit, you don't just have to invest in those tech names, invest in the names that are going to benefit from the technology itself. And so using AI integrated into its inventory management and sales strategies, they have found a lot of success for managing their inventories, for attracting significant interest from fund managers for growth. The revenue has grown from $6.1 billion in 2020 to about $6.6 billion in 2024. For a clothing manufacturer, that's pretty solid growth. Their cash flow, from $200 million to $1.2 billion in 2 years. Their profitability as well has been growing. Their net margin up from 8.1% in 2023. They were losing money during the pandemic. Projected to be 11% this upcoming year and 11.6% the next year. And so with that being said, there's a lot of positivity here. Now, there is 5% short interest out there, which is not too crazy. They do pay a solid dividend, but their earnings have been upgraded consistently. They had a pretty big drop-off from their high of about 290 down to about 220. But if you see some good consolidation in the 220 range, I think that would be a good point to enter. You're only trading at 16 times forward-looking earnings. That is Ralph Lauren, ticker RL. Thanks for watching, and thank you for subscribing. Now, before we head off for the weekend, I wanted to briefly touch on Meme Mania 2.0 in that retail investors in Europe are targeting hedge funds. And they're targeting specific names where they can see short interest. And because of that, stocks have surged between 40 and 300%, far outpacing the defensive sector rally that we've seen in Europe. Now, similar to what you saw in the U.S., a lot of this is focused on Reddit, on Wall Street Bets Germany, on various forums where people are aggregating. And unsurprisingly, these hedge funds have been caught off guard. Now, there are some differences between what is going on in Europe and what is going on in the US. The reporting within Europe is far more robust. It is easier to find these names where hedge funds have a lot of short interest out there. One company that they targeted, Eutelsat, at one point had nearly 100% of its shares out on loan. And so that was obviously a target for short squeezes. Overall, what you're seeing in Europe, and maybe what you may see again in the US, is retail trading activity exploding. And as it becomes easier to see where market structure tells you there can be positive returns, as the information becomes more available, certainly what you are expecting and what you can expect to see is more retail traders taking advantage of information that was previously less than accessible. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And please be sure to rate and review while you are over there. Remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics. We can help you calculate your investor risk number. We can build a full financial plan for you and help you optimize the potential of your 401k. If you're interested, head over to investtalk.com. It all starts with a free portfolio review. Just click the portfolio review button. Remember, it is a free and confidential service. Also, quick update on the progression of our March Madness competition is posted on investtalk.com, as well as us going over the winners each and every day on the show here. Our newsletter, also available over on investtalk.com. If you're interested in more content, head over to investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.